Calling all my Asian squad everywhere! It is time to put a spotlight on our story! Welcome to your dose of inspiration with me, Richard Juan. Today we are introducing a new segment in the podcast called Hashtag Real Talk, wherein we discuss a topic that would concern most of the youth of today. Today's topic is, should you pursue your passion or pursue a more stable career path? Or to put it in simpler terms, do what I love or do what pays? And joining me for today's episode, we have with us a Korean-American singer and songwriter. She's a singer behind the songs Bite My Lower Lips, Destiny, and Ah-Oo, among others. As a songwriter, she wrote the hit songs Some and Special Love. Let us all welcome the very talented Ezna. Hi, Ezna.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show. How's everything there in Korea?
Actually, the dust, the micro dust in Korea is real. And it was really bad for the last couple weeks. But we had some really heavy pour rain maybe 2 days ago. And it like cleared up the sky. So it's we have like perfect air, the perfect spring weather right now. So I'm in a good mood.
Yeah, so Ezna, how did you end up in Korea? I mean, I know you grew up in the U.S., right? You were born there and raised there, I'd assume?
Yes, I was born and raised in sunny California. I moved here about 11 years ago. This is my 12th year in Korea. So I have been here for quite a while now. It was kind of random. Honestly, I had just this gut feeling to move to Korea, and I kind of followed it, and it kind of turned into this, you know. But it was it's 12 years in the making. But you know, initially it was just this gut feeling that I had. And 11 years ago, K-pop was not a cool thing. Like, no one knew or listened to K-pop, and you know, people would not really know what it was, and I didn't really honestly know what it was or listen to what it was either. But again, just following that gut feeling, and now like K-pop and Hallyu is like the main source of entertainment in the world right now, which is kind of crazy.
But you moved to Korea just to pursue music and K-pop?
Yeah, I've been back and forth to Korea a lot, but this last time when I decided to move to Korea 11 years ago, it was solely for the purpose for me to pursue my career here as an entertainer.
Okay.
And so it was definitely a risk because I had no idea what I was in, you know, putting myself in, like, I had no idea. I didn't know anyone in the industry. So it was a huge gamble when I first came here. Yeah.
But you knew that you were going to pursue a music career for sure, like...
Oh, yeah. Ever since I was four.
Oh, wow. And that's why you studied jazz vocal in UCLA.
Yeah, so I grew up singing. I grew up dancing. I grew up acting. And, you know, usually it's your mom that's telling you, like, you got to go take piano lessons and, you know, violin lessons and whatnot, but... For me, it was the other way around. I was like, Mom, when can you take me to Korean dance class? Or when can I learn piano? And so it was the other way. Ever since I was four, my mom told me the moment I started speaking, I kind of sang.
So you knew from a very young age that you were very, very passionate about music.
Yeah, my goal in life to become an entertainer and to become an influential person through the arts never changed my whole life. So I had literally one goal, which is very, very rare. But I was lucky enough to have that.
So how did it feel for you when you actually first released your single in Korea? And what was the story behind that single?
The first official single that I put out, which means I debuted as a singer, was 2014. Yeah. But it was a song called I Love You, and I wrote the song, and it's in English and in Korean. I had written the song maybe about 6-7 months before it actually came out, but the funny story with that is I didn't originally write it for myself. There was another artist that was looking for a song, and you know, I wrote it pretty quickly, and then I let them listen to it, but they were like, there's no way that I can sing this song because it's just so you. And I would not do justice to the song. So then I was like, you know what? maybe I should just sing it then. And then so I talked to my producer and was like, you know what, I want to sing this song. And that ended up being my debut single.
How did it feel? Like, was it like a realizing a lifelong dream moment, or was it more of like,
eh? Oh no, it was amazing. It wasn't like a impactful, all of a sudden this is gonna happen. It kind of just slowly was like, oh, you wrote the song, oh, he doesn't want it, oh, but you want to sing it, oh, maybe you should record it, oh, maybe we should do this, oh, you should just debut then. And it was like such a normal kunyang. It was so weird because it wasn't like, let's get this ready and like pump this out. It was like, oh, let's go and then let's do this. And so by the time it came out, I was like, did I just debut as a singer? So it was really weird because, you know, we shot the music video for it too, but even the music video was like very quiet, like, you know, it was like, you know, it wasn't anything like so out there or crazy. It was very quiet, it was very classy, you know, it was, you know, just chill. And so the whole process to me was not stressful, I guess.
That's good, that's good. So while you are a singer, of course, you also did a couple of projects as a songwriter. How did you get yourself into songwriting? Was that something that you have always preferred, or do you prefer something being in front of the camera?
I didn't know that songwriting was a separate thing. I thought all singers wrote their own music. So growing up, you know, I never learned how to write lyrics or songwriting or whatever, you know, like I played the piano and I sang. So I was like, well, let me just do it at the same time. Like it just makes sense. Uh-huh. And I would always have like melodies or words just kind of in my head. And I normally write the song and the lyrics at the same time. So for me, I thought everyone does that. I didn't know there was a separate job as a songwriter or a top liner that just writes melody over someone else's. Like, I didn't know any of that existed until I moved to Korea to pursue this.
Because this whole time you just thought that, hey, you know what, a singer basically writes the melody, writes the song, writes everything, and performs it, and if it does well, it's not like a huge team behind it. And then how does it feel when you found out that it's such a huge team? Like, were you just surprised? Were you like, oh my god, this is completely something that I didn't expect?
I mean, it was natural again. Like, I think when I was in America and we wrote songs with like my friends and whatnot, it was a natural kind of atmosphere and just very easy to work with other people, just to jam, right? We jam a lot in America.
Yeah.
But we don't really jam in Korea, when I first came here at least. Cool. And so I was like, then how do you guys write music together? And so they were like, usually it's just you send it or like you do this. Like, there's not a lot of collaborativeness in the process of writing the music. And so it was the weirdest thing for me when they were like, can you just write the melody to this? And I was like, huh? But who wrote the track then? And they're like, oh, that's what toplining is. Someone else makes a track and then you come up with the melody. And then I was like, then who writes the lyrics? They're like, there's usually lyricists out there that have a separate thing for this. I was like, oh, I had no idea. This can be all compartmentalized. I didn't know it was separate.
Do you think that's better for when it comes to making music? Or is it, how do you feel as a musician? I mean, having that kind of setup.
So a lot of the songs you hear now, it's a very collaborative work. It's really rare that the whole thing be done from top to bottom by one person. And I think the reason why more and more people are able to like one song, like a more diverse audience is able to like one song, is possibly because there are so many different people bringing in different aspects, different ideas, or different, in a sense, even culture into that song.
Yeah.
And so that's why more and more people can enjoy this one song, if that makes sense.
Got it. That kind of does. So, I mean, would you say that was challenging? And if so, like, what would that be one of the biggest challenges that you face as an artist? Like, as in to collaborate with so many people for one song, or?
Yeah, because then it starts getting technical when it comes to who wrote the song.
Right.
And can you have pride in writing this song when you didn't do the whole thing, right? So that mm-hmm. was the issue for me when I worked on the song Some, because it was a collaborative work. There were three yeah. people that wrote the song. I distinctly know which parts I wrote.
right.
You know? But it's like, but I didn't write the whole thing. And so when that song blew up and everyone was like, oh, congratulations, like, I can't believe you wrote this historical song in Korea. Yeah. In the beginning, I was like, I don't even know if I should be like, thank you, because I didn't write the whole thing. You know, even the lyrics, like, I know exactly mm-hmm. where I wrote. And there's so many people that took part in that lyrics. But I realized in America, that's so common.
Right.
Like, in American song productions, it's very common to have, like, 5-6 writers as lyricists on one song.
Oh, so even if you yeah. just write like one line, you'll be credited.
Like a line or two, you should be getting credited. That's how like meticulous they are in America. Whereas in Korea, it's a little bit like blurry, so they don't really know how to like really credit all that stuff. Right. I think they're getting a little bit better because they've been working with a lot of producers overseas.
That's true. That is very true. So, yeah. What are some of your other challenges that you faced as an artist? Like, besides, of course, the credit side of things, any major stuff that you've realized that they were challenging?
Well, I think for me, it's two things that are always kind of separated, where it's me as the artist and then me as like the producer and the songwriter. But for me, that is one thing for me as an artist. But over time, it was kind of separated. And so I was focusing more on just being like the producer Esna, the songwriter Esna, and I didn't focus much on being the artist Esna. And you know, I have, you know, passion for this is what I want, and being the producer was just naturally what that was for me. Being an artist was a singer and a producer, it was one thing for me, but it got kind of separated into two different categories. But thankfully this year, I am trying to bring that all back together, and I'm mm-hmm. slowly releasing new music again and preparing for like the upcoming albums, and it's all songs that I wrote, and I'm finally going to be able to share them with everyone. And so like I'm bringing those two back together into one, and so that's pretty exciting for me.
I think that's kind of like a full circle story, where you kind of started with that and then you diverted into doing a lot of different types of things, or doing, you know, specifics, and then now you're going back to the core, I would say, of your music, where you do everything, right?
Yeah, it's very exciting right now. And I'm also very nervous, because it's been just so long since I've done anything music related, honestly, for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like worried about the response and worried about the volume of responses, you know, like, so mm-hmm. I'm at a weird place right now where I'm like really excited to share all this new music, but I'm like, what if people don't listen to it? Like, they forgot about me, because think about the saturation, like in the last 5 years,
right.
How many new singers, yeah. how many new idol groups, like how many new people, immensely talented people, you know, have been coming up, and I'm like, mm-hmm. can I get back in there somehow?
So what do you think is your biggest triumph so far, being in this industry for 6 years now, I think, since your debut, yes. technically?
Mm-hmm. I think still staying true to who I am and my own color. There were many times where, you know, especially image-wise, you know, people telling me to lose mad weight and like change things about myself, you know, but before I was really against it. I didn't, because I was like, I'm not trying to be a model, like, why does it matter? And like, actually losing weight and like getting fit and like health and fitness was a very big trauma in my life, and so having to overcome that was very difficult, especially when, you know, there are things being said to you like, unless you hit a certain number, like, we're not going to put you on TV, we're not going to do anything for you unless you look like a certain way.
That's real.
Oh yeah, it's so real. And you know, I had to fight that, and like right now I am the fittest I've ever been, because I chose to be, and I'm choosing to be that way right now, living my lifestyle this way. But before, when it was other people telling me to do it and like forcefully telling me to do it, I'm gonna do it when I'm ready, you know? Like, it was.
I think that's the American side of you.
Oh, yeah, very, very much so. But I grew up with that even in America too. Even starting with, you know, in the house, because my mom knew I wanted to be in entertainment, and that meant I had to, you know, it kind of equated into looking pretty. You had to be pretty. You had to be presentable. You had to be slim. Like, you know. Yeah. So I think even at a young age, I always kind of like rebelled against that in some way. But right now I'm doing it for me. Like, I want to look good. Like, I want to be the fittest I've ever been in my life now. And like, it's been 5 years, four years since I've done any like real TV stuff. And I'm like, if I'm making this comeback this year and I've been gone for that long, like, I want people to be like, who is that? You know?
Who's this new artist in town?
Exactly. And so I'm trying really hard right now, but not only because of like the image thing, but you know, I'm like, hitting my mid-30s now and I'm getting older, so I want to be healthy and fit, especially if I want to, you know, eventually become a mother, you know. Right. If it's harder when you get older, so I'm like, maybe I need to get fit, you know, so that I can be healthy for my children later. It's like, mm-hmm. So mindset's changed a lot, and like, I really want to be like the fittest I've ever been in my life this year, and I'm slowly working towards that, so it's happening. But that is the biggest challenge in my life that I've had to overcome, is this whole image thing.
And you beat that, and then now you're going towards that direction. That's great.
It is. I'm healthily going in that direction right now.
Yeah. All right, Ezna. So let's now proceed to our hashtag Real Talk discussion. For today's topic, it is, should you pursue your passion or pursue a more stable career path? Or to put it into simpler terms, do what I love or do what pays? This is such a tough question for a lot of people, because following your passion does not always bring food to the table. I mean, for some people, it's very. If you're passionate about, let's say, artificial intelligence or computer programming nowadays, that makes a lot of money. But when it comes to art, like what we are both pursuing, it does not always bring food to the table. So
So I'm also a teacher here and there, and so a lot of my advice for people who want to become a singer or an actor or whatever in the arts. At first, the very first thing is I ask them is like, why do you want to do it? Like, why do you want to become a singer or an actor? Why? What is the reason behind that? And it also depends on how old they are. If they're super young and they still got like, you know, years and years ahead of them, I'm like, dude, just go for your passion right now. Like, you will not have the freedom to do this when you're older. So go ahead and pursue your passion. But if someone's trying to start late, like someone around my age is going to be like, I want to give up being like, I don't know, a lawyer. Office job, and I want to all of a sudden be a singer. I'm like, sing for me. Let me see how good you are first. Let's be real. Like, is it going to work?
Correct.
So yeah, it's it really depends what stage in your life you are, whether you should be pursuing your passion or, you know, shit that pays. For the longest time, I was pursuing my passion without getting paid, but the only work that I was doing, I would make sure there was a relation to the career path that I chose. Does that make sense?
So technically, we should find a job that pays you, that is in line with the passion that you are doing, in a sense, so that you're still in that circle.
Yeah, and obviously you're still going to be struggling, but if you're, first of all, if you really do have a talent for it, and sometimes I'm just kind of like, I don't think you have a talent for it. But I think for me, I just need to be blunt and honest with people who come in and ask me for advice, whatever that may be in life. I'm always that person that is just super blunt and straightforward, even amongst my friends. So then if people are asking me like about career choices and their path or direction, I feel like I have to be even more honest.
Correct. Because, you know, Nuna, like, for me, I honestly believe that you have to be real with yourself. I think that's the number one thing. Like, you should know at a young age, or even, I mean, for example, me, like, I love football. Football as in soccer, football. And growing up, it's been my number one passion. But I knew that I was never going to be a professional footballer. I knew that I wasn't good enough. Like, I was very real to myself. I knew that, hey, you know what? Growing up in Hong Kong, had such a small environment where, you know, we don't play competitive enough with the international standard. I was never going to get somewhere. So I knew to myself that, you know what? This is not a career that I want to, that I will ever have. Might as well just chase something else that is better. And who knew that next thing I know, I'll be right here having a podcast talking to you. I think that it's crucial to be real.
Right. The difference is this, is there's a difference between what you're really good at and what you really love to do. And it's really important for you to differentiate those two things. And it's a blessing if those two things are the same thing. You know what I mean? But that's also very rare.
Yeah.
But yeah, along the lines with what you're saying, it's just the realization and being honest with yourself and true to yourself about what your passion is and what, you know, what you're good at. You're actually really good at. Like, and, you know, if it's the same thing, then fucking go for it. But if it's not, you got to be smart about when to focus on the passion or the good thing according to where you are in your life path.
My question for you is, when do you give up then? If you're chasing your passion and it's not getting where you want to, I mean, do you ever give up? Should you, I don't know, like, what should you do? What do you think?
I don't want to use the word give up. But I think surrendering is a better word choice.
Mm-hmm.
Just understanding, you know, that it's not going to happen. But you still have this passion for it, so you're not going to give it up. And there's always going to be a part of you that will always pursue this passion no matter what, if you're really that passionate about something.
Yeah.
But you surrender, you know, not being able to succeed in this area.
Yeah.
Because you know that there are other people that actually deserve this more, maybe.
Yeah.
There's so many other, you know, reasons for that surrendering, but you're never going to give it up. I don't think you should ever give up. But I think there are moments where you need to surrender that and kind of release it and let it go so that you can actually really focus on something that is going to be better for you in the end.
Correct. Because I think, you know, like, it's accepting the fact that you may not be the best in the world at this thing, but being the best version of yourself at this thing, for me personally, is good enough. Like, you know, like we're all built different, and not all of us are built to be the best version of the, you know, to be the best footballer in the world. I mean, how, there's only a handful of people can be that, but for me, as long as you're the best footballer that Richard Juan can be, then I'm happy. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you know you put in all your hard work, right?
Yeah. And I think we know, everyone will know about themselves when, like, you've hit that cap. There's, like, this thing you feel. You just know.
Yes.
But
yes,
you're just trying to, like, kind of, like, wiggle your way around and make it work. But we all know when that moment is.
And it's, you have to accept it.
Accepting it. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. High five.
Correct. High five. Virtual high five. We knew. I had feeling that you were going to say that.
Yeah.
All right, so Ezna, just I guess let's wrap it up. So what are your final thoughts or final advice for the our listeners out there who are not sure, should we pursue passion or should we, you know, go for something that pays, something that's more stable?
I think in the beginning, it's always good to go for your passion first, especially if you're younger. Go for it when you have the time to go for it. But be wise about understanding when you kind of hit a wall. And you just got to know a lot about yourself. So I think in the end, it just comes down to you really taking the time to know who you are, like, know what you want, know what your flaws are, and know what your real character is in order for you to actually make something happen in your life.
Yeah.
And once you figure all of that out,
I think you will know yourself, because there's no right or wrong answer. Like, there's no way that someone else is going to tell you, like, stop pursuing your passion or go get a job that pays, you know? Not even your parents can tell you that, honestly. Like, in the end, you make that decision for yourself. So you just really need to know yourself in order for you to make that decision for yourself.
That's so good. It's pretty much like embracing or accepting your flaws and make the most out of your other strengths, you know? Mm-hmm. Wow, that was such a great discussion about this topic. And once again, thank you so much, Esna, for gracing today's podcast and today's episode for today's new segment called Hashtag Real Talk. And I hope our dear listeners out there got to learn a lot from today's show. And once again, thank you so much, Nuna. And once again, thank you so much for listening. Until next time.